Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
Boy, I tell you, in today's program, we've got phenomenal callers and some great topics. We got a new spin on brokers selling non-traded real estate investment trusts. You won't believe this one.
And we're also going to talk a little bit about the stock market. Is it overextended? And what should you do about it?
Yeah. What's the best way to plan for it? So we're going to talk about that and more. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for being part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters today. Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people like yourself throughout the week and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And many, of course, many folks listen to us via podcast, and some listen to us being broadcast on terrestrial radio. Incidentally, we do tend to record these programs during the week and take callers, but we'd love to hear from you. And if you've got a question for us, we'd love to take your call and answer any question that you might throw our way.
And regarding your 401k or IRAs or life insurance or anything regarding money.
Yeah, most of our job is to help people get to a point in life where they have enough financial resources so that work is an option and not an obligation. We help a lot of people transition into retirement. Of course, this program, we have a lot of calls driven around those things as well. And I just a couple days ago, I had breakfast with an individual, mid-30s. Had bought and sold a couple businesses, had another business.
Wow.
And didn't feel I had enough money saved. And we started talking about, he said he never really wants to retire, but he felt like maybe he should have a financial planner and have money set aside. I said, with this conversation about building wealth, and he's got a business that has quite a bit of value. And
what did you tell him to do?
I said, max out the 401k and don't worry about anything else.
Yeah, and if you have children or a spouse, buy a bunch of term life insurance.
He already had the term life insurance. The point was, it was really about getting to a point where the work was an option and not an obligation. And it's funny, he was already in that position in life.
Oh, he was. Oh, good for him. But
yeah.
But maybe he was there because he didn't need to be there, right? You ever think about that? Maybe his success was driven by the fact that he just liked business and he's pretty good at it.
I suppose so. But a lot of people we work with, of course, the many that really need to do a career change, really need to retire, and having that plan in place so that they know that if they didn't show up for work ever again, they've got money coming in to maintain their lifestyle.
Over 50% of the people that retire actually don't do it on their own terms, which means they don't get to the final date that they wanted to or thought they would when they go to retire. And it's not always the job changes. Sometimes their health changes, their spouse's health changes. Or I've had a number of clients that have retired early to take care of a parent.
Or a spouse. Again, to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's talk to Rodolfo in Sacramento. Rodolfo, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, hi, guys.
Hi, Rodolfo.
Yeah, hey, you guys are part of our Saturday morning, me and my wife.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and the question is regarding a variable annuity.
Okay.
I have one that I bought back in 2003 for $40,000. I now, since in 2011, I did a 1035 exchange to Vanguard, and it's doing pretty good. It has grown to about $126,000 right now. But my question is when the time comes for me to draw down on it, what do you think should be my option? right now, I'm not planning to draw any money from it, though.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'll be 67 next month.
So with variable annuities, the way the taxation works on withdrawals, it's not like a mutual fund where you can sell some shares and incur some capital gain and have some return of your principal. With annuities, the first monies you pull out are your earnings. So you put in $40,000. It's worth $126,000. If you said, I'm going to pull out $40,000, 100% of that will be taxable to you.
If you just go and pull it out.
Yes. Until you get all the way down to your principal, 100% of your withdrawals are taxable.
But you can annuitize it over a period of years or for your lifetime. And then every distribution is a percentage of it comes back as principal and some of it comes back as gain. So if you annuitize this today, and let's say you said, oh, they're going to send me $1,200 a month for the next 15 years, $400 of that $1,200 would be a return of principal and $800 would be a taxable event to you.
It's ordinary income.
So.
Okay.
The one of the reasons we're not big fans of variable annuity
is
the tax structure. Had you bought a mutual fund or let's say an index fund or a tax efficient fund.
If Vanguard bought an index fund.
Then when you went to do the distribution, you wouldn't be taxed at an ordinary income. You'd be taxed at a capital gains rate, which is
correct.
Lower.
Yeah.
But we are where we are.
Yes.
So
exactly.
Are you taking income from any of your investments now, other investments?
No, not yet, guys.
Okay.
We're doing pretty good. I have a $61,000 annual income from my military and also from my Social Security.
Got it.
And my wife is still working with the state.
We
make about $130,000 a year.
And what do you have in 401ks, IRAs, that sort of thing?
Well, if we include this this annuity,
mm-hmm.
we're probably in the window of about $800,000.
Okay, so you've got approximately $675,000 in other investments. And you have any debt on your home or any rental properties, anything like that?
No rental property, but our home mortgage is paid off.
Okay, so when you go to take distributions, when you go to start taking, you're going to have a required minimum distribution.
The reality is, You're probably never going to take this money out.
You're probably never going to
because you're going to have required minimum distributions on your IRA
in just 3.5 years.
So once you're over 70, if you say, well, should I take it from my IRA or from my annuity? Would say, well, take it from your IRA
because you have to
because they're taxed identically at that point, except for the IRA has required minimum distributions and the annuities do not.
And you might not ever take it. The question that we would ask you as you get up in years is. The people that are going to inherit this from you and your wife, are they in a lower or higher marginal tax rate than you? That's the next question.
So I wouldn't do worry about any distributions today
or in the future.
Well, I think when your wife retires, maybe look at it and see what the income needs are. But when you start looking at the required minimum distributions along with your other pension and Social Security income,
where is your wife retiring from? Where does she work? Where she receives this pension benefit when she retires?
Yeah, she's with coppers.
Okay.
With well, PERS, yeah. They're never going to spend this.
They're not going to spend this money.
Well, that's another thing, too. That's right. And, you know, like I said, just in case we have to draw down from it, what will be the pecking order? Where will we be in the pecking order?
You probably start with your IRAs first.
No question.
You start with your IRAs first. This is probably never going
to
happen.
Because your IRAs have required minimum distributions. Our government forces you to dream.
And the annuities don't. And you're probably never going to touch this in your lifetime.
Yeah, I'm hoping to.
Well, then the time to start, I would look at it when your wife retires, right about that time, really take a hard look at it. And you might, that's the time you're really going to take a hard look at it and say, does it make some sense to annuitize this over a period of time and have that additional income? But
we don't
want to do it
if
now.
If you came in for a financial plan, we would definitively, if you went through our 7 personal decision points, we would be able to definitively answer that question, but I can tell you just based on 25 plus years of experience of what we know about you and your savings type, you're never going to spend this. I'm making a generalization.
Yeah. Well, and what has to come out of the IRAs.
Correct. It's a generalization, but unless we actually did the 7 personal decision points process, which actually may make sense for you and your wife, since she is moving into retirement age.
Yeah. All right, we've got to take a quick break here. I appreciate the call, Rodolfo. We wish you well. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's talk with Jane in Sacramento. Jane, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thank you for taking my call today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. How can we help you today?
Well, I'm retired on pension and Social Security, and I own a home that is at a point where it needs about $20,000 worth of home repairs. So I was hoping you can help me make a decision of what money source
okay.
I should use for that. So I do have IRA, and I have a home equity that I could use. It's at a zero balance.
How much do you have in your IRA?
Yeah, thank you. I have about $557, $275 in money market and cash, and equities about $280.
And how much is your monthly pension? How much is your monthly pension and your Social Security?
$3,600, about $3,600.
For your pension and Social Security combined?
No, my Social Security on top of that is about $1,400.
And you're single?
Yes.
And how old are you?
How old?
65.
And have you taken anything from your IRA in the past?
No.
And you owe nothing on the home, is that correct?
Correct. Well, I have $5,000 to go, but I'll be done by the end of the year.
And how much money do you have in liquid cash, like money in the bank or?
About 30. No. Let's say 15.
15? Well, you've done a great job. You really have.
Yes.
You're a great saver. How long have you been retired? Just out of curiosity. Not that it's going to help us.
4 years. 4 years. I retired at 60.
Good for you. You've done a great job saving.
Home's paid off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
you're single?
Yes.
Okay.
Your best bet is going to to take these dollars from your retirement account. The question I have is, I'm not sure if it should all be done in 2017 or it makes sense to split it between 17 and 18. One thing we know is that in 5 years, Jane, when you are age 70 and a half, you're going to have to start taking required minimum distributions out of this at about 3.5%. So it's going to be at about $20,000 a year just by the time you're age 70 and a half.
So we'll answer your question and then we'll give you a couple planning ideas to go forward.
I think we have the same. If I were in your situation, Jane, I'd look at your tax. Who does your taxes now?
Me.
Okay. Do you use like TurboTax or one of those programs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
perfect.
Been pretty easy.
Simple.
Yeah. You know,
simple. This is going to be easy for you.
You're going to be able to do this no problem.
So what you're going to just do some what ifs right now, even if it was last year's tax. I don't know if they have 2017 out yet.
They should.
Plug in the numbers, what you think they're going to be, and you can estimate from last year. Then start adding in an IRA distribution and see how it impacts things. Because this could actually have an impact on your Social Security taxation. So even if you're in a 15% federal tax bracket.
It may cause part of your Social Security to become taxable.
Which could be the equivalent of sticking you in a 22% federal tax bracket.
Because it could create 50% of your Social Security to become a taxable event. But you actually have to go through the exercise.
You're going to have to go through the numbers.
And you might decide, okay, it makes sense for me to take a $13,000 distribution in 2017 and a $7,000 distribution in 2018 or all. Once you do that, that answers your question for the $20,000. What you need to do going forward, and if you're not comfortable doing it, go to a qualified either tax advisor or financial advisor that can help you through with the process, which is to determine how much money you should convert from your regular IRA to a Roth IRA on an annual basis.
Yep.
Between now and the age of 70 and a half. Frankly, you would have been better off doing this when you were
last few years.
60 when you retired or 61 before you started Social Security than you are today.
The reason for this, Jane, is that you're in a 15% federal tax bracket. And you still have some room there. You could have more income. What this strategy would do is enable you to lock in at this tax rate when we have some projections, knowing that in the future, once this required minimum distribution starts really kicking in, when you're now 73, 75, the taxation of that could be much higher in the future.
Does that make sense?
Kind of.
Okay. Well, or sit down with a qualified advisor and they'll walk you through this, or CPA, and they'll walk you through the process.
If you don't get into debt with a home equity.
I would not.
Yeah, correct. That's a completely different decision.
No, I wouldn't bother. I don't like that idea.
I just thought of that because right now I essentially have no tax deduction.
You won't get a tax deduction on this because your standard deductions are going to be so high.
Correct. And you're going to have to, where will the money come from to pay off the home equity line of credit?
Well, true. It'd have to
come. It's going to come from the IRA. Now we're talking about
reduction of standard of living.
And you should not reduce your standard of living by any means. You should spend every dime that comes into your household. And then some, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I'm with you on that.
Okay. So what you want to do is you want to sit down with, if you were sitting in our office, we'd actually answer the private, whether you should, how you're going to take the $20,000. And then we'd answer the question of how much money should you be converting to a Roth IRA every year, looking at your situation 4 and 5 years out to get an estimate of what the required minimum distributions.
And it may or may not make sense to do the conversion based on the taxation of Social Security that could impact you.
And we don't know that
until
we
go through
the numbers. Do you have children?
Yes.
Okay. So and you've done some beneficiary designation and trust work?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes.
All right.
They're old enough with full-time jobs and all that.
That's what we're hoping for.
Jane, glad you called. And you know, you're wise in taking the time to call and if you continue to let your retirement dollars grow until you're 7 and a half, might create some additional tax problems down the road. So this is what the money's saved for, right? You've been putting money in your retirement account, and here you are. You need $20,000 for home repairs. Seems like the perfect place to do it. You've got other income sources. What we just want to do is make sure that we're doing it from a tax efficient manner. So very much appreciate the call, Jane. Let's continue on with calls and head to Northern California with Elaine. Elaine, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, Scott and Pat.
Hi, Elaine.
Thanks for my call. I want to know what general advice you would give a 34-year-old married couple with two young children. They have a home and a mortgage, and they max out their retirement plans. They have life insurance. Maybe you can tell me what kind and what quantity they should have. They own. They earn about $180,000 a year. And they have $37,000 in the bank and want to pay off their mortgage a little more. And I was saying, well, maybe you ought to be saving more before you do that. So I was wondering.
And
what
this kind is,
of
are these your kids? Is this your daughter or your son?
Yes, my daughter.
You should be very proud. You should be extremely proud. They bought some term life insurance, I assume.
I don't remember, so I think it's term. Yeah.
Did they talk about Dave Ramsey at all?
Because he's big on getting the home paid off when you're young.
Big about getting the home paid off, which I agree with.
I don't think they're following Dave Ramsey or reading anything. My daughter is very conservative about money.
I don't.
Why are you? It sounds to me, I'm not. So you called to ask. So it sounds to me like they're doing pretty well financially. They're on the journey here,
they are.
Right?
Yeah.
Why are you involving yourself on what they should be doing with this extra $37,000 instead of letting them make up the decision?
Well, because they called and asked.
Okay. Good enough. Thank you. So,
my husband and I did not agree on the feedback to them. So I thought, well, let's call you and find out.
And you think they should pay it or they should invest it?
I think they should save more based upon their earnings. Let's save $180,000 a year. I think they should have more in cash or liquid assets in case of emergencies. They have two very young children.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of just starting out. They've only been married 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So that was my thought.
I'm going to go with you, Elaine.
On their mortgage.
I'm going to go with you. So one of the things I would look at is I'd make sure that they each had at least $1 million if they both earn equal amounts of dollars, at least $1 million in term life insurance.
Term life insurance.
And I'd probably get a 20-year level term. at least $1 million. I'd have an umbrella liability on their house of at least $1 million. If you watch the grandchildren at all at your home, I would get at least $1 million of umbrella liability on your home.
Okay.
I would maximize the 401ks. I'd probably set this mortgage up over, you said they're in the mid-20s?
Early
34.
And their interest is 3.75.
I wouldn't be in a rush to pay it off at 34.
I'd keep it on max out
my retirement accounts. I'd save for my kids' college costs.
Yep.
I'd maximize my savings up.
$37,000 in the bank. I'd probably get it to $60,000 or $70,000. I agree with you. Your husband's wrong.
again.
And then I would start funding the 529 plans for the children's education in that order.
Actually, she's asked me to do that before the end of the year, so I'm working on that one.
Wait, asked you to fund them or for her to fund them?
For her.
To set them up.
I do for her Roth and IRAs. I manage the account for her. I'm retired at the time. She doesn't.
So you want to use the state of Utah's plan.
Well, the state of California's plan's fine, too.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they live in Massachusetts, so I'm going to start there.
Yes, definitely.
And we're going to do the state of Utah for the kids.
Right. Very nice. Very nice.
All right.
Great, well, great mother. I hope you seem to be pretty involved in the child's life. But, no, you should be very proud.
Yeah.
You're on the right track.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for calling, Elaine. It's always interesting when
mom calls.
Yeah, it's good.
Hey, before we go back to the calls here, Pat, let's, we started to see some volatility kick back into the market. And I guess volatility, no one cares about the volatility upside. It's the downside of the volatility.
Yes. We haven't had a 5% decline or greater in this marketplace in over 18 months. 5% or greater decline in 18 months.
Historically, there's a 10% decline every 9 months.
5% or greater than, and it's only happened one other time in history. One other time in history where
we've gone this long?
Yes, without a 5% decline.
So here's what I find interesting. People get excited about high stock prices, and I guess we'll see in the coming weeks if things are going to continue to march higher or if the volatility will bring things back down. But people get excited. They tend to get excited about high stock prices, and I'll run into people I know. Boy, things must be going great, huh? The market's higher. You must have. So now I've kind of come back to it. So, are you planning on selling out everything right now? Because if you're still contributing to your 401k, you should be upset every time the market's higher. Well, why would you want to buy when things are expensive, when you can buy when they're low?
But it's
the one market I know of that people get excited when prices go up, not when they're down.
What scares me is the lack of volatility in a marketplace. And the reason for that, if you have a constant march upward, there could have the appearance that the risk has left the marketplace.
Goldman Sachs just came out like a week ago and said that's the highest risk appetite they've ever seen.
And part of it is the fear of missing out. People are afraid, I need to invest now or I'm going to miss out. Or I'm going to miss it, right? But you've got to remember, you're buying companies' earnings. That's what you're buying. You're not buying today's earnings. You're buying the future earnings of those companies.
So get this. If we want to look at, let's adjust earnings for inflation for a moment. If we look at inflation-corrected corporate earnings from the S&P 500 index, the 500 largest companies, look at the corporate earnings.
Let's call it all the profit that the S&P 500 makes.
In the third quarter of 2017.
All right.
Right before the financial crisis.
A little bit more than 10 years ago.
Okay.
No, 2007 or 2017?
I'm sorry, 2007.
2007, so a little bit more than 10 years ago.
Then we look at third quarter of 2017.
Okay.
Inflation adjusted earnings have grown by a whopping, overall, not annual, overall, 6%. Earnings are only 6% higher than they were going in 2007. If we look at our stock prices, inflation adjusted, 39% higher
And why should we care about that, Scott?
We are paying roughly 32% more for our companies today on a real terms than we were paying in 2007 based upon earnings. We are paying a third more today than we were at the height of the market before the downturn.
So that is actually, you should pause for a minute and think about that.
Does that mean we think stocks are a bad place? Absolutely not. But it does mean you need to consider if you are overexposed to stocks right now, overweighted, maybe it's a good time to do a rebalance in your portfolio. Maybe it's a good time to look at how much risk you're taking and see if you've got the right kind of portfolio that to withstand the next downturn, whenever that might come. We don't know what's going
to happen. Especially if you're within 3 to 5 years away from retirement.
Yes.
Especially.
Especially if you're nearing retirement.
Especially.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-2-HANSOM is the number. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Hey, we were running out of time during this last segment. We're talking about the high valuations in today's stock market. And if you've been a listener for a long time, you're probably thinking, you know, these idiots talked about this a year ago.
We did.
These bozos talked about it 2 years ago. They talked about it 3 years ago. The stock market keeps going higher. Why do I keep listening to those guys? We have no idea when the next downturn is going to come. But we do believe that history tends to repeat itself. We believe there will be yet another downturn like there always has been a downturn. We believe that markets will continue to go through cycles. The stock market, the real estate market, the bond market. Things will go through cycles. We will have another recession at some point in time. That is a reality.
And we know that if you look at past indicators, things that happened previously, things have a tendency to kind of repeat themselves, not identically, but in similar fashions. In a similar fashion. Won't be identical, and the trigger event will never, ever be the same. It will never be the same, which will either cause the stock prices to go up or to go down in a dramatic fashion. But here's what we do know. That on a historical basis, almost across anything you measure, price to earnings, the cap rate, cape rate, almost anything you measure, that these prices in the U.S. stock market are a little lofty. Does it make sense?
Particularly in a rising interest rate environment, which is so bizarre that we have the, don't fight the Fed. We had the Fed raise interest rates, what, 3 times last year?
Yeah. And not just the Fed, I mean, globally. But there, you know, then there's talk that maybe there won't be any more interest rate increases this year. Who knows? But here's what you do know. This is the time that you should actually look at your portfolio and say, here's what the average American's doing. I'll tell you what the average American's doing is they're living under the wealth effect. What's the wealth effect? Well, the average American is now saving less than 3% of their disposable income.
Less than we've seen since
2009 is a point of comparison. In 2009, the average American was saving 6.6% of their disposable income. Why is that? Why is that? If asset prices are going up in terms of your home, right?
Any investments? People look at
the wealth effect.
Man, look at my 401k.
My assets doing the work for me.
I have more than I thought I needed.
My assets working for me.
But things go through cycles.
They absolutely go through cycles.
Look. If the money in your that is invested in your stock portfolio you don't need for 5+ years, leave it there.
It's okay.
You should be. We don't know when it's. I mean, you're not going to be able to time the market. But if two things: one, if you're going to need some of those dollars within the next 5 years, it shouldn't be in stocks. And secondly, if there's a chance you might react to the downturn and sell when things are lower, if you did that in the last downturn, or you might do that. Then you clearly need to reduce what's in your stock portfolio.
Now, in saying all this, an indexed annuity is not the answer.
No, gosh, no.
Because that is what how people are selling these index annuities. So look, you get some of the art of the upturn in the market.
They're garbage.
And you have none of the down risk. Well, the reality is you miss out on so much of the up that it's just not worth the cost associated with it, especially if they want you to keep the monies there for 7 to 10 to 12 years with
or
a
longer.
Big surrender charge.
They're garbage.
Which means you could have ridden through your own market cycle without having the insurance company hold your money
kidding.
And keep you hidden from it.
All right. Let's go to the phones here. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Walnut Creek, California, talk with David. David, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
So I'm 60 years old and looking at retiring here in a little less than a couple of years at 62. And I have a wife who is 57 years old. And we have a principal residence here in the Bay Area. And a couple of years ago, bought a home for retirement in the foothills. And what we would like to know is that we know you put an emphasis on going into retirement debt-free, and the mortgages are all we carry, and looking to see if it makes sense for us to pay down or pay off either of these mortgages.
Today or at 62?
Today or between now and then.
What's the value of the home in the Bay Area?
About $550,000.
And what do you owe on it?
$365,000.
And what's the value of the home in the foothills?
Right around $600,000 to $650,000, and we owe $329,000 on that one.
And if you were able to pay it off today, do you have the proceeds in money outside IRAs or 401ks?
Well, outside of IRAs, so our picture is we have about $1.7 million in tax-deferred accounts and about $940,000 in after-tax accounts, of which $180,000 is in cash.
What do you want to do? What do you and your wife think you should do?
Well, you know, we've been talking about how much the stock market has run up. You know, we've done very well, but we're thinking that, you know, with the chances that there may be some correction, it might be nice to take a safe bet on maybe using some money to pay down one of these loans. So we definitely want to go into retirement, hopefully with no debt at all.
And do you plan on selling the home in the Bay Area when you retire?
We haven't decided whether or not we'll sell it or keep it and rent it. It kind of depends on what the income stream looks like at that point in time.
What did you pay
for
the home
here? She paid $550,000 for the home here.
Okay.
So, what
so
did
it was
gain
really right at the top of the market. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, which is one concern. It's a year, if it's a year and a half from now and the plan is to sell the house in a year and a half from now, who knows what the market's going to be like a year and a half from now.
And you may...
Right, and we actually may need... We may need to keep this house. If I retire in a year and a half, she's most likely going to keep working for another 2 to 5 years, yep. And it may
Got
need
it.
The house, you know, before she retires.
That'll go over well.
Yeah.
And are these the mortgages both fixed rate, long term mortgages?
Yes, and they're both around 3.5% to 3.75%.
And tell me how the dollars are invested in the after-tax accounts.
Okay, so most of it is in you know, diversified trust account, brokerage account that we have with one of the large institutions, and it's diversified. You know, probably pretty close to 50-50 stocks and
Got
bonds.
It. And do you have any pension income, or is your income going to be coming from your savings?
No, I'm going to have a pretty good pension. I at 62, my pension, if I did a 50% joint survivor, would be about $74,000 a year.
Oh, okay.
Good for you. So, these are great questions.
You can do. I can make an argument why you should pay down the mortgage. I can make an argument why you should never.
I would advocate paying down the mortgage, and I would advocate probably doing a lot of it right now.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with Pat.
And the reason is you've got I without even looking at that portfolio of $940,000, you have things in there. In addition to that, $190,000 that you have in cash is almost a no-brainer. I mean, you
either go invest it and take on risk,
or pay down the mortgage. But you're borrowing money at 3.75%, and you're lending money at less than 1.
Right.
That's, you know, when you put money in cash, you're lending that money to someone, and you're borrowing on those mortgages. So you could do the math right there. The difference between those two is 2.5% a year at the amount that you, even on that $190,000, it's costing you almost $5,000 a year to make that decision. So that's an easy one. So you're going to do that.
Right. Well, some of that's going to be an emergency fund requirement, but nowhere near that amount of money, right?
You don't need to really worry about an emergency fund. Emergency funds are for people that have no money.
You need to have something you can convert to cash, because that's not going to fluctuate in value. Which, your point is, of the 940,000 in investments, if half are not tied to stocks, there probably been some fixed income funds, some that have little or no gain in them at all.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct. Yeah. And because of your age, because of your age 60, all the money in your 401k is liquid.
Correct.
So this idea of
emergency. Some of it's not tied to stock. There's going to be some portion that's in somewhat conservative thing that can be turned to cash. Yes.
So the concept of emergency money makes sense for most people, but not. You have plenty of emergency money. So
the key is liquidity. Be able to convert something to cash in a hurry without worrying about the financial markets.
So if you were in our office, we'd go through this analysis and figure out, what real percentage of your portfolio is actually invested at less than what you're paying on the mortgage is? And does that make sense? But most certainly, I would take that 190, pay it down, and I'd probably do more than that. I wouldn't have any problem in the world paying down a good portion, if not all, of those mortgages, or pay down enough so that if we made monthly payments, they'd all be paid off by the time your wife retired.
So right. Maybe and what about the
400 and then pay down the rest over the next 3 years or 5 years?
And would that include the principal residence here in Walnut Creek, or would you just wait and
You probably won't have that in 10 years, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. And I wouldn't bother paying it down. And the part of this is a lot of this comes from an emotional standpoint. To give people more confidence in retirement, to feel more secure in retirement, what we've found over the years is that for the vast majority of people, they feel more confident and more secure when the home's paid off. That's the bottom line. Whether or not it's going to result in the highest net worth on the day they die, that's another story. But as far as having the most amount of confidence and peace today, it's having the home paid off.
Right. And I love you guys' comment that money not going out is the same as money coming in. So.
Well, you'll feel it when you're retired, and you've got a nice pension coming in. But when you're retired and you realize, you know, David doesn't have any chance to go out there and earn any more money, at least unless he goes back to work. But the fact of not having to make a monthly mortgage payment, it's just freeing.
It's confidence. When you're 75 and you have as I hear some advisors advocate, the largest mortgage possible. Because it is going to make, they say it with such confidence, because it is going to make more money than it's going to cost you less than your investments. It's because you say it with confidence doesn't mean it's true. The danger with that is if you're 70 or 75 and you're going through market fluctuations and you've got this mortgage payment, you're emotionally going to react to it. You can't help yourself. Everyone reacts to their portfolios.
You know, absolutely. And that's not where we want to be in life. Yeah. We want to, you know, have a retirement we can count on, know where we are, and not be sitting there eating your liver all the time about what's going on with your money.
So in your situation, I would pay 100% of the Foothill property off based upon.
If you can, without any tax consequences.
Well, yeah, without tax consequences. And if you sit down with a qualified advisor, they're going to show you what part of the portfolio you should be using to do that and how to rebalance the portfolio. And remember, your advisor is conflicted. I'm conflicted as an advisor because I get paid to manage money. And when you're telling someone to take the money that I'm getting paid on, or your advisor is getting paid on, and to spend it or to put it elsewhere, it isn't self-serving. And by our very nature, humans are self-serving. That's how we survive. So your advisor isn't necessarily going to give you advice that is beneficial to you and harmful to them. Although I hope they will. I think many do. But you need to ask the question.
Got it.
All right, David. Look at your,
all right.
Sound like you're a great
shape. Wait, by the way, David, where in the foothills? Do you mind telling us?
Grass Valley.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And for those outside of Northern California, Grass Valley is a...
It's a beautiful...
It's an old mining town.
Mm-hmm.
Out in the foothills, beautiful pines and...
Yeah.
One of those areas just gets a couple dustings of snow
a
year.
It's what they call above the fog and below the snow.
Well, it's that time in today's program where we're going to talk real advice. And during this segment, we talk with a financial advisor of Hanson McLean, one of our certified financial planners, and have them highlight a client experience they had, someone that they were helping out. And obviously, we don't share the exact details of the individual client or names, that sort of thing, but the overall position they were in, and what the outcome was after they met with a financial advisor.
And why do we do this, Scott?
Well, in part to show the value of the financial advice of a good certified fiduciary financial planner.
So
not a broker, but...
I'll give you I was at the gym doing yoga, as a matter of fact, which... you might, if you've met me in person, you might find that hard to believe. First of all, that I went to a gym, or second of all, that I actually did, that I could sit still long enough to do yoga.
That is what surprises me.
So anyway, and a lady afterwards said, we were talking and she asked me where I worked. And she said, hey, I've had some issues and there was a death in my family and I went to my financial advisor and they didn't know whether I should get Social Security or not get Social Security, or... just basically, like, what do I do? And I said, well, you don't have a financial advisor to speak of. You have someone that manages a portfolio. And the difference between someone that manages a portfolio and a financial advisor is a good financial advisor, which I believe Hanson McLean is a good firm. We do asset management. We manage over $2.5 billion. We do that. But... in addition to that,
primarily in index funds, not thinking we're trying to outsmart the markets.
Yes, yes. Well-balanced portfolios using modern portfolio theory that are measured and monitored by our two chartered financial analysts. We do that. In fact, I believe we do a good job at that. But in addition to that, we try to actually bring in the holistic financial planning. And I've always had a problem with the word holistic, but we try to bring in all the other factors that are actually helping someone to achieve their financial goals. And that's financial planning. And the reason we like to do these advisor segments is it gives the listener a good example of how that process works.
Yeah. All right. So we've got today, and by the way, the advice that this particular client had is unique to them, and your advice with an advisor might be somewhat different. So today we've got with us Eric Henry. Eric is a certified financial planner. He joined Hanson McLean over 10 years ago. He meets with clients in our Sacramento, California office. And Eric, thanks for joining the program today.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Yeah. So tell us about who you're working with.
Well, before I do that, Pat, I do know you, and I still have a hard time believing that you're doing yoga.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you. I can only do it.
Just don't be behind him if you're doing it.
Just
class.
Once every 2 weeks.
In the side and front.
And mostly it's because I like the clothes.
Pat and his Lululemon.
Okay, I just
pants.
Don't want to think about
okay.
that. Really.
All right, well, let's go on with this show.
So, yeah. So, anyway, recently I had the opportunity to meet with some longtime clients of ours just doing the annual review process that we typically do. And in the course of our conversation, I asked a question about long-term care planning. And the response I got back really caught me off guard. They said, oh, yeah, Eric, we're looking into that right now. We're actually going to be making an investment in an assisted living facility. And I said, well, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Tell me what you're referring to. And they went on to tell me that they'd gone to coffee with a friend of theirs, that their friend had worked with her financial advisor and had given them some literature on an investment that she'd made in an assisted living facility. And they brought me that literature to look at. They wanted my opinion. I looked at it and I said, do you really understand what this is? And they said, well, we tried to look into it, but really we couldn't find much about it online, so we wanted you to see it and think if it was a good idea. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. Do you think if you put money into this, and by the way, how much are you thinking of putting into it? And they said about $50,000, which was a third of the money that they keep in their bank savings.
These were clients of Hanson McLean?
They are clients of ours.
Hanson McLean clients. Okay.
We manage in retirement assets, we manage about $500,000. But this was money that they were thinking about using that they had sitting in a bank account.
Okay.
It really isn't generating much income. So they bring this literature. I review it. I ask them, do you really understand how you're going to get your money out of this? And they said, well, we think it would be like if we were to call you, if it was just a phone call. And I said, no, that's not at all how this works. And Pat, I think this is probably a little bit closer to your heart because this happened to somebody very near and dear to you. I went on to explain to them that what they were actually looking at was what's referred to as a real estate investment trust. This one in particular happened to be a public non-listed trust. And I explained to them that if they were to put money into this, that they would actually be tying money up for a period of years. And that getting money back out of this over time could take several years in the process of going through a redemption through paperwork and so on, and that there would be timelines around that. And they said, well, this isn't clear to us at all. And I said, well, did your friend explain any of this to you? And they said, well, no, none of this was really put forward to us. And I said, well, honestly, this is not anything we would present to you here. There are real estate investment trusts that you could use. There are good ones that you could use. At times we've had them within our own portfolios, but they're very liquid. We can get in and out of them with a simple trade. But this isn't like that whatsoever.
So Eric, this is a new spin on the selling of a non-traded real estate investment trust. So they sold it as kind of an
answer for your long-term care needs.
Is that
exactly?
Did they believe that this would actually help?
Should one of them have Alzheimer's or something with this?
They thought this was actually going to allow them the opportunity, if need be, that they would actually get some facility care out of this.
Oh. But did the literature say anything about that?
It said that what was confusing to them is that the investments were made in skilled nursing facilities. That was the focus of the trust, right? So they had this confusion about what it was actually going to do for them, but they thought, well, they were going to get some return on it in the process. And I said, there may be some income to you on something like this, but this is in no way a liquid investment that you're going to get money out of quickly if you need to. And this in no way will provide you any kind of a health benefit down the road should something of that nature befall you.
This is a whole new spin on selling this garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, and that just caught me by complete surprise. And I further I went with it, and I said, did your friend talk about how her advisor was paid in this process? Any compensation? And they said, of course, she wasn't aware of anything either. And I just said, that's exactly why we never talk to you about this. This is such a transactional type of a product that you would never know what you've paid somebody in a commission.
Yeah.
It's just not there.
Well, and they may have a need for long-term care insurance. We don't sell long-term care insurance, but we oftentimes will tell someone you need
some long-term care planning. How do we structure our assets in such a way to cover some of those costs should they arise?
Yeah. So,
absolutely.
Well, thank you for that,
Anything
Eric.
Else
that
about
is a whole
situation?
New spin.
What was that, Scott?
Is there anything else interesting about this?
I know. Oh, the only thing that really kind of made me chuckle, and I'll be careful about how I say this, is that when my clients were having coffee with their friend and they've mentioned that they were coming to see me, she said, "Well, why are you seeing him at his office? Why do you go to him? why doesn't he just come to you like my person does? And I said, well, you know, that's interesting. You know, we do our business our way. This is our business model. This is what we're comfortable with. We like to have the privacy of the conversation in our office. I'd like to show you your accounts on in our systems and on our screens and how we do what we do. I can't show you that if I come to your house, and that's really your preference. But I just thought it was kind of different. And I know business is changing now, but I just thought that was kind of different about the conversation.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sharing that with us, Eric. And that is a unique way of people trying to spin a sale on a... But, you know, it's interesting about you mentioned advisors going to their house. And I've been a practicing financial advisor for 27 years. And the challenges, I mean, if you're looking for an advisor, I'm sure you can find someone who'll come to your house in the evenings, on the weekends, whenever's convenient for you. How many clients can that person really be serving? And what is that going to be one of your top advisors, you think?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have brain surgery,
well,
do you think the brain surgeon who's got time to swing by your house to do the pre-op visit is going to be someone you want doing the brain
surgery?
Let's
just start with this premise. I don't want people working on my house coming to my house. Why would I want someone there who's trying to sell me some garbage product coming to my house? And that's what that person was doing.
The reason we are... Look,
important to use a fee-based financial advisor.
That's exactly where I was going.
Someone that has the ability to operate as a fiduciary.
And someone who they are completely agnostic as the product. The product...
Agnostic doesn't mean they don't have an opinion. It means that that their objective and your objective is one and the same as a fiduciary.
Acting as a fiduciary. And when someone's selling you a non-traded REIT, I don't see how they can be acting as a fiduciary at that moment.
I thought those had been in the decline.
Well, here we are. We're seeing them back. Anyway, we are out of time. Thanks for being part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And by the way, if you haven't been there, HansonMcLean.com recently, I suggest you go there. One of the things we're doing each week, we're doing a retirement minute. And it's broadcast on in Sacramento region on KCRA with 6 o'clock news hour during the 6 o'clock news hour. And, of course, it's on our website each week. We're out of time, so see you around next weekend. Enjoy the rest of this one. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.